Blog Talk Radio.
Bring
Rabbi Yomi Azikiwe, and welcome back to another edition of the Pan-African Journal. The Pan-African Journal is an audio news magazine that's brought to you here on a weekly basis. I am your host, Rabbi Yomi Azikiwe, and today is May 9th, 2021, Sunday, and we're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit, and we'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in once again to yet another edition of the Pan-African Journal. This program features our regular Pan-African Newswire report. We'll have dispatches on the World Health Organization's assessment that the African continent is preparing to prevent another surge of COVID-19 infections on the continent. A study in the United States suggests that the number of actual coronavirus deaths have been undercounted by over 300,000. Swaziland has reported that it has run out of available vaccines inside this southern African state. And the European Union has been accused of attempting to sabotage the upcoming national elections in the Horn of Africa state of Ethiopia. In the second hour, we examine in detail many of the news stories impacting Africa and the international community. Finally, we pay tribute to the Pan-African musician and poet Bob Marley on the 40th anniversary of his transition in 1981. These and other features will be brought to you during the course of our program. Stay tuned, and we'll be back with more of our program for this week.
Come up for house by what time? 6 o'clock. No, 5 o'clock, eh? Then you call this house by... Which time? What do you call them? 11:30. Then you will come shop. You go to bed. Which kind of enjoyment do you enjoy now? And you get wife. Oh, well. Because life hard, bro. Oh, now because of accommodation. I swear, hard, bro, my brother. See, everything is a move. People, they move up and down. Then they get their money. But enjoyment, not the inside. If you not talk through me, I go talk through. I see her every day, and I show. Thank you.
so he dey happen. Na so I dey see him. Na so he dey happen. Huh? Your first problem when you arrive into Lagos. Now so I dey see him. Now so he dey happen. Now so I dey see him. Now so he happen. Whoa. Ah. Before you get the house, you go bribe. You go beg. You go work at Tote. You go tired. Oh, when you get the house, nothing said that's the end. You go pay for 5 years in advance. Just take a go take money for a job before you park inside the house where he did you. Huh? Huh? For Lagos. Caretaker na chief for Lagos. Landlord na king for Lagos. Caretaker na chief for Lagos. Landlord na king. Oh! Then they take big money for house, show them power. Then they take big money for house, show them power. First I don't go, said I don't go. First I don't go, said I don't go. But no accommodation for Lagos. No accommodation for Lagos. No accommodation for city. No accommodation for Lagos. No accommodation for city. Not so I see him.
No accommodation.
Marocco house no day.
No accommodation for Lagos.
Ebutero house no day.
No accommodation for Lagos.
Moshalashinko house no day.
No accommodation for Lagos.
Nasoso overhead bridge now you will see. Accommodation for Lagos.
No accommodation for Lagos.
Oh, ha! Our people not know where then they go. Our people not know where then they come from. Our people not know where then they go. Our people don't know where them they come from. Let them give the poor people where to stay. Every day, then they drive people about. They not provide house for people to stay. Workers no get, farmers no get, laborer no get, fiction no get. Now so I they see him every day. Now so they happen every day. Now so I dey see him every day. Now so he dey happen every day. Now so I see him.
No accommodation for Lagos.
No accommodation for city.
No accommodation for Lagos.
Sokoto nko house no dey. Out today.
No accommodation for Lagos.
For Bende, out today.
No accommodation for Lagos.
Or your state, out today.
No accommodation for Lagos.
No accommodation for city.
No accommodation for Lagos.
Africa country of percussion. Africa the country of where you have different types of dancing full of vibration. Africa rhythm, we are talking about the power, the vibration, and the forces. African music is music that moves you and me because it's full of rhythm. Take you to a little tree. Thank you.
Rhythm. So I deceive them every day, and I so it happen every time. Civilization,
now here we want.
Discrimination,
now here we don't want.
Civilization,
now here we want.
Discrimination,
now here we don't want.
Sing with me. Civilization,
now here we want.
Discrimination,
now here we don't want.
Civilization,
now here we want.
Discrimination,
now here we don't want.
Forget them, say. nation. We want time. May we wake our home
for here.
May we make them home
for here.
Make them wake our home
for here.
Make them wake our home
for here.
Plenty of things to do together. So why can't we come together? No discrimination. Togetherness. Why? Right on.
That is easy. brother.
Thank you.
haría como ya no amo si tu co haría a yo y le chichico haría lo si guayu y bichanco haría a yo y le chichico haría yo y le guayu.
Love is a natural thing. Love, love, love. Love is a natural thing.
It takes a man to love a woman. It takes a woman to love a man. It takes a man to love a woman. It takes a woman to love a man.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pan-African Journal, this special worldwide radio broadcast for Sunday, May 9th, 2021. We are broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. That was the music of Tony Allen with the album entitled No Accommodations for Lagos. And right now we want to move into our Pan-African Newswire segment. Our lead story deals with the status of the COVID-19 pandemic on the African continent. African countries appear to be preparing themselves to avoid another surge of COVID-19 cases as variants such as the one that emerged in India could unleash a third wave on the continent. African countries have reported a collective 4.5 million cases of COVID-19 infections so far, according to an article written by Veronica Mohale. Health ministers across the continent met on yesterday to review a strategy that the African Union set up at the beginning of last year to tackle the pandemic and seek better ways to flatten infection curves. This comes as the World Health Organization said the continent was now playing catch up with the rest of the world in terms of vaccine rollouts. The World Health Organization has emphasized the importance of ensuring societies across Africa be provided with coronavirus vaccines in efforts to slow the spread of COVID-19. World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus spoke during a virtual joint meeting of African Union health ministers. Ghebreyesus warned of a new wave of COVID-19 infections in Africa due to delayed vaccine supplies, a slow rollout, and new variants. What is happening now in many other parts of the world can happen in our Africa, or we let down our guard. The emergence of rapidly spreading variants combined with the premature easing of public health and social measures and the inequitable distribution of vaccines is having tragic consequences. The World Health Organization said Africa now accounts for only 2% of vaccine doses administered globally, with South Africa still only in its first phase of inoculating its ambitious target of 1.25 million healthcare workers. In the United States, which remains the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic, the United States, which has reported the world's worst overall COVID-19 death toll, has no doubt been undercounting fatal cases. Top pandemic advisor Anthony Fauci said earlier today, the country has officially lost over 581,000 people to the disease caused by the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus. But a University of Washington study released on Thursday estimated deaths at more than 900,000. That's a bit more than I would have thought the undercounting was, Fauci told NBC's. He went on to say, but I think there's no doubt that we are and have been undercounting. The United States has reported over 32.6 million cases since the virus was first identified at the end of 2019 in China. America was battered by a spike in cases and deaths after the end of year holidays, but since January, new infections have come down as vaccination rates have gone up. We are turning the corner. We have 58% of adult Americans with at least one shot. Over 110 million Americans are fully vaccinated, a White House COVID-19 coordinator Jeffrey Zients told the cable news network State of the Union program. President Joe Biden wants 70% of adults in the United States to have received at least one shot of the COVID-19 vaccine by the July 4th Independence Day holiday. But the rate peaked around April the 10th and has been declining since then, with the vaccine holdouts slowing the race to population immunity. Federal, state, and local officials are partnering with pharmacies, restaurants, breweries, supermarkets, and sports teams to come up with incentives to get people to get their shots. In New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy launched a shot and a beer program to encourage vaccinations, while in West Virginia, Governor Jim Justice announced that the state will offer $100 saving bonds to residents aged 16 to 35 who get inoculated. You're listening to the Pan-African Newswire segment of the Pan-African Journal. In other news, only 35,000 of Swaziland's 1.2 million people have received their first vaccination against coronavirus, and the kingdom has run out. The acting Prime Minister Themba Masuku said more were expected. He said they should arrive in Swaziland, also known as Eswatini, before the end of May 2021. Masuku and Health Minister Lizzie Nkosi have been promising new vaccines were imminent for some weeks. Masuku, in a statement on Thursday, said to receive a batch of the AstraZeneca and Pfizer vaccines from the COVAX facility before the end of this month. Additionally, we are also in line to receive the first batch of 500,000 vaccines from Oxford AstraZeneca before the end of this month to continue with the rollout of the vaccination exercise. He went on to say that while numbers of new infections nationally are relatively low, standing at 15 cases recorded in 1 week and no deaths reported in 18 days, we cannot be lulled into a sense of comfort and complacency. Despite the shortage of vaccines, Masuku announced relaxations on restrictions imposed as part of the kingdom's partial lockdown to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. The number of people allowed to attend outdoor arts and entertainment events has been increased to 500. Indoor events can now accommodate up to 300 people. More sports, such as basketball, netball, rugby, sevens, volleyball, and women's football, will be allowed to resume. Alcohol sales have been relaxed but continue to be restricted to home consumption. According to the World Health Organization, in Swaziland, from January the 3rd of 2020 to the 6th of May of this year, 2021, there had been 18,467 confirmed cases of COVID-19, with 671 deaths reported to the World Health Organization. As of May 5th, a total of 34,897 vaccine doses had been administered. And finally, the Ethiopian Political Parties Joint Council has urged the European Union to reconsider its stance and observed the 6 Ethiopian general elections. Briefing journalists after a two-day consultative meeting with its members, the council chairperson, Rahel Bati, said that the contending political parties have made in-depth discussions to make the upcoming pre-post-election process peaceful, fair, and to receive the trust of all parties. Political parties finally agreed to participate in the election through making themselves accountable and responsible. to work to ensure solidarity among Ethiopians, and the government is also expected to make the election free and fair and a foundation for democratization in Ethiopia. Concerning election observers, any interested local and international entity can observe the election, create enabling conditions for the elections to be credible and democratic, and observers have to move respecting the constitution and sovereignty of the country. Appreciating the interest of the European Union to observe the election, the Council urged the Union to resume its stand and play its observatory role. Considering the challenges the nation has faced and election observers' legal rights, the Ethiopian government would hopefully see its way keeping the country's sovereignty intact. The Council respects the stance of the EU to observe the election or not, but it has to make its reason public. The Council finally urged all parties to contribute their share to the effort geared towards making the upcoming election free, fair, democratic, and willing the confidence of all parties involved. With that, we're going to conclude the Pan-African Newswire segment of this program. We want to remind our listeners that the Pan-African Newswire is an international electronic press service. It is designed to foster intelligent discussions on the affairs of African people throughout the continent and the world. The press agency was founded in January of 1998. Since then, it has published thousands upon thousands of articles and dispatches in numerous newspapers, in magazines, journals, research reports, and on blogs and websites throughout the world. The Pan-African Newswire represents the only daily international news source on Pan-African and global affairs. If you'd like to log on to the Pan-African Newswire, and so you can stay abreast of some of the most pressing and burning issues of the day, just go to our website at panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's panafricannews.blogspot.com. And you can also have access to the Pan-African Journal, the worldwide radio broadcast, by merely logging on to the Pan-African Radio Network. And that's at blogtalkradio.com/Pan-African Journal. That's blogtalkradio.com/Pan-African Journal. And, of course, you can share this program with other potential listeners by merely copying and pasting the links into emails and sending those emails out to other potential listeners. The program could also be shared through copying and pasting the links on blogs and websites, as well as social media networks. The links can be shared on Facebook, Twitter, among others. We'll take a musical interlude. We'll be back with more of our program.
I'd like to dedicate this song to little Junior Parker, a cousin of mine that's gone on, but we'd like to kind of carry on.
Baby,
Welcome back, and you're listening to the Patton African Journal Worldwide Radio Broadcast, and that was the sound of Hal Green with the tune entitled Take Me to the River. And we, of course, are here at the Patton African Journal Worldwide Radio Broadcast, and today is Sunday, May 9th, 2021. We're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to yet another edition of our program. Right now, we're going to go to a extensive news report on African affairs, world affairs, discussion on the current situation, struggle that is unfolding in Palestine from CGTN. Let's listen in.
Scores of Palestinians injured on Holy Easter night in Muslim month of Ramadan. The Egyptian health minister to inspect a Sinovac vaccine production line. And DRC President Tshisekedi meets the Egyptian president in Cairo. Welcome to Africa Live on CGTN with me, Beatrice Marshall, in Nairobi. Also coming up on the program, in business news, South Africa's GDP to expand 3 to 4% this year after 2020 contraction. And in sport, Nigerian football fans divided over FIFA's plans to start elite African Super League. The unrest in East Jerusalem continues. The Palestine Red Crescent says at least 80 more Palestinians have been injured in demonstrations and violent clashes with Israeli police. Clashes took place on Saturday night on Laylat al-Qadr, the holiest night of Ramadan. Around 80,000 worshippers had gathered at Al-Aqsa Mosque. Local media say Palestinians threw stones, bottles, fireworks and explosives at police officers, and police dispersed them with stun grenades and water cannons. It followed clashes on Friday night when over 200 Palestinians and 17 Israeli police officers were injured. Stephanie Fried reports from Jerusalem.
Security is heightened and police policy in Jerusalem Saturday night is zero tolerance. Those measures are a response to violent clashes that erupted overnight Friday between Israeli police and Palestinian protesters at Islam's third holiest site, Al-Aqsa Mosque. Hundreds, including police, were injured in the skirmishes. Muslim worshippers inside the mosque compound hurled glass bottles, rocks, and chairs at police. Police stormed the mosque area and fired tear gas, stun grenades, and rubber bullets at demonstrators. On Saturday, international bodies, including the UN, the U.S. State Department, and regional leaders, appealed to both sides for calm. Demonstrations against the mosque storming were held in Arab communities throughout Israel Saturday, and in Hamas-controlled Gaza, leaders threatened to escalate protests along the border fence with Israel in response to the events in Jerusalem. The latest escalation comes on the heels of weeks of violent clashes in Israeli-occupied East Jerusalem between Jewish settlers, Israeli police, and Palestinians over an impending court order to evict Palestinian families from their homes and replace them with Jewish settlers. Tensions have run high in Jerusalem during the past month, the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. According to Muslim tradition, Saturday night, Laylat al-Qadr, is observed by reflection and all-night prayer inside mosques. Stephanie Fried, CGTN, Jerusalem.
The World Health Organization has approved China's Sinopharm COVID vaccine for emergency use. Friday's announcement means the vaccine can now be included in the COVAX facility. Our reporter Feng Yilei talks to Xiao Yiming, the chief expert at the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Xiao is also a member of China's COVID-19 Vaccine Research and Development Task Force.
I also wonder why for the China vaccine, why it's so slow, and for other countries are much faster. Because the world are really needing the vaccine, like African, until now is only a few percentage of their, or even many countries, less than 1% of their people receive the vaccine. I do hope after the first one and the other vaccine, not only from China, from all other countries, if they met the standard, international standards, they should all be faster.
What role will the Chinese vaccine play in addressing current challenges like virus mutations and virus continued spread in developing countries, as you said?
If you really want to judge a vaccine, especially its impact on the control of the pandemic, usually we consider three features. Mm-hmm. One is efficacious, the second is safety, mm-hmm. the third, also very important, is accessibility. Mm-hmm. The inactive with the vaccine, they have, I always say it's like a good students, which in study, in physics, in moral, they are all good. It's a complementary, good balance. For some vaccine with high efficacy, but they need like minus 70 to store, to transport. So the accessibility is not that good. I think for many developing countries, they can choose according to their own epidemic situation.
Will China be able to carry out its promise given that the vaccination rate within the country is still relatively low?
We are not only the China first, mm-hmm. but we are the global first. So we provide the vaccine to Chinese people and the people in other countries at the same time. Mm-hmm. And Sinopharm already provided vaccine to about 60 countries in the world. And the production capacity is scaled up. So our production will be more and more. I mean, 5 billion for this year is only like the first stage. Mm-hmm. So next year, the production is going way up.
Meanwhile, Egypt's Minister of Health, Hala Zayed, is on Sunday expected to inspect production lines for the Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine. State-owned company Vaxera is going to be producing the vaccine in Cairo. And following the visit, Zayed will hold a press conference to announce details on the production and reveal new information regarding the vaccine manufacturing agreement with China. After new mutations of the coronavirus were reported in some countries, Egypt heightened its anti-COVID-19 measures at all its entry points. Those entering the country must undergo a rapid COVID-19 test. According to the Africa CDC, Egypt has recorded over 234,000 cases, over 12,000 deaths, and has over 176,000 recoveries. Well, CGTN's Adil Mahroui is joining us now from Cairo with more on that story. Adele, Egypt's Health Minister Hala Zayed is due to visit production lines designated to manufacture locally produced COVID-19 vaccine under the license from Sinovac. What do we know?
Egypt and Sinovac, Vaxera, Egypt's Vaxera, which is the government arm for vaccination manufacturing, it's the biggest facility in Egypt, has signed, along with China's Sinovac, a cooperation to produce the Sinovac CoronaVac vaccine domestically in Egypt. The purpose of this collaboration is to help in the shortage, in the global shortage, in providing COVID-19 vaccines by increasing the number of production lines available. Egypt and China are both working together to make sure that there is a manufacturing hub in Africa. So one of the main purposes of this cooperation is not only to cover Egypt's domestic demand for the COVID-19 vaccine, but is also to support as many African countries as possible with this vaccine. What the health minister today is doing is she's inspecting the first phase of launching this, or at least the preparations for it. She is in here in Cairo at Vaxera to inspect the production lines. Initially, Egypt and Vaxera and Sinovac are planning to produce 20 million vaccines, and the target is to reach up to 80 million vaccines annually in both the Vaxera factory in downtown Cairo and another one on the outskirts of the Egyptian capital.
And so what is the progress in achieving the required production capacity, and what is the time frame for the first doses of the jab to enter the market?
So, as I told you, the aim is to reach 80 million vaccines annually. This, of course, will not happen instantly. They will begin with the existing infrastructure in the Cairo production facility in downtown Cairo. They will begin the process now. The preparations, as we're seeing by the health minister, will be taking place today, which means that the factory is getting ready to soon begin the production. No specific time or date has been announced. We are expecting actually the health minister to announce that date today in her press conference. But earlier announcement from the health ministry, they said that maximum by the end of quarter three this year, the production of the vaccines will see the light, and there will be actual jabs to be distributed in Egypt and Africa.
And what are the expected benefits, Adele, of the Chinese vaccines in battling the pandemic in Egypt, which has been adversely affected by the pandemic?
So far, Beatrice, Egypt has only two kinds of vaccines. It has the AstraZeneca and Sinopharm. Sinopharm was the first to be supported in Egypt. Egypt was part of the clinical three trials. So the cooperation with China in terms of the vaccine cooperation in general has been quite phenomenal under the COVID-19 pandemic. So from the very early phases of even producing and testing the vaccine, the two countries have been strongly cooperating with each other. And when the Egyptian contracts from AstraZeneca were delayed, China has quickly moved to support Egypt with additional additional vaccines from the Chinese government to the Egyptian government. So in general, the collaboration is quite strong. When it comes to the reputation of the vaccines, among the population of those interested to take the vaccines in Egypt, many prefer the Chinese vaccine as the fears from the rare blood clotting reported for AstraZeneca drives them away from that and makes them prefer more the Sinopharm vaccine and the Chinese alternative for the COVID-19. So that's mainly how the support is going, and the appetite for the Chinese vaccine is quite high, at least from what appears to be quite common on social media and among people who ask frequently whether they can choose and select which vaccine to take at vaccination centers here in Egypt.
All right, Adel Mahmoud joining us there from Cairo. Thank you. Well, in India, the total infections of COVID-19 have risen by over 400,000 for the fourth consecutive day. It comes amid strict lockdowns in several states. Abdullah Hashmi has more.
Known as the rich man's disease and a poor man's burden, COVID-19 has choked India's capital in its second wave in more deadlier ways than one. While the capital's urban population struggles to find oxygen, ventilators and medicines to survive, Delhi's slum dwellers face the additional burden of having lost jobs and access to food and ration for their daily sustenance. Most men in Delhi's slums are daily wage laborers working at construction sites or factories that have been shut down due to the pandemic. The women, usually employed as house help by the neighboring urban households, have also been laid off to prevent the spread of the deadly virus.
We used to work as domestic help in big houses, but the owners have asked us not to come to their houses anymore because of Corona. They're doing all their house chores on their own now. They haven't provided us any financial support in lieu of our job loss.
Last week, the Delhi government had claimed it had provided a compensation of Rs 5,000 to each construction worker as temporary relief. This week, it announced free ration for all ration card holders, but the last mile delivery of this ration has always been questionable.
Our children are going hungry. We are struggling to fund ration. We don't even have water to drink. We are not able to fund stuff we need. All shops are closed.
As the dream of a brighter future in the capital is shattered for these immigrant workers, they look to return to their homes, but even that comes with an unaffordable price tag.
What have they thought of the poor? Even if we want to go back home, we can't, because train tickets are either not available or cost 2,000 rupees in the black market. The government seems to support the rich but kill the poor. In some cruel way, it seems a way to control India's burgeoning population.
As the Delhi government has been cornered by the pandemic from all sides, perhaps it could take a tip or two in COVID-19 management from Asia's biggest slum, Dharavi, which last year not only flattened the curve, but also this year has managed to fight the second wave of COVID-19 with much more efficacy. Abdullah Hashmi, CGTN, Delhi.
Well, India's COVID-19 outbreak has hit the news headlines across the world, with many countries offering a hand of support to the Asian nation. India has been recording hundreds of thousands of new infections and thousands of deaths daily. Some health experts say many countries, including South Africa, should learn from India's situation. CGTN's Lisan Jamela has more.
South Africa's Health Minister Zweli Mkhize has warned of rising COVID-19 infections. Mkhize says provinces have seen a sharp rise in infections in the past 14 days. The Health Minister says 21 districts in 7 provinces have had more than a 20% average increase in COVID-19 cases in the last fortnight. Such an increase has not been recorded since mid-February. According to some researchers and medical experts, there are some lessons that South Africa can learn from the situation in India in order to avoid it.
So India for a while was seeing dropping numbers until maybe a few weeks ago. The situation seems to be a combination of factors, including a new variant in India that's been double mutating according to the medical experts. It's also been the case that they've been gathering crowds in mega cities. And I think there are some lessons. For example, one of the key causes in the spread of the virus in India has been groups gathering in campaign situations, because in India they have some elections taking place this year, and South Africa itself has elections scheduled for this year. So I think moving forward, we need to adhere to the regulations. We need to limit gathering in crowds and be less skeptical of the vaccine when eventually it is rolled out.
South Africa will be holding the 2021 local government elections in October. Owing to this crisis in India, there have been calls here from many quarters for South Africa to ban travel from that country.
I think we have enough systems in place that are able to detect cases, that are able to regulate travel. I don't think an outright ban is what's needed at this time, but I think what's in place needs to be implemented so that people who come in and out of the country are tested, quarantined according to the World Health Organization regulations. We shouldn't stigmatize one particular country, which speaks to what was being said last year when the virus was still in China. And I think the world is better served if there's more collaboration among countries.
The South African Health Ministry has raised its concerns about the variant that is currently dominant in India. The OR Tambo, King Shaka and Cape Town International Airports have now been put on high alert to ensure that travelers entering the country are thoroughly screened and, if needed, tested on the spot. Yolisan Jabela for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
The UN Refugee Agency says 45 people have been killed and more than 17,500 people in Burkina Faso have been forcefully displaced from their homes in the past 10 days. Gunmen have been carrying out a series of attacks in 3 separate regions in the West African nation. They have been burning down houses and shooting civilians dead. The assailants also ransacked health centers. Attacks by the armed groups linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State have been rising sharply since the start of the year. Burkina Faso's ill-equipped army has struggled to contain the spread of the violence. Elsewhere, gunmen have killed 7 Nigerian police officers in a night attack in the southern oil hub of Rivers State. According to a statement by the police, the attackers opened fire at a checkpoint on a Friday evening, then drove on to hit 2 police stations. Officers fired back, killing 2 of the raiders and injuring some of the others who escaped in a stolen car. The killings came amid a deteriorating security in River State, whose capital, Port Harcourt, is a gateway to the oil-rich Delta region. You're watching Africa Live. Still ahead on the program, DRC's President Tshisekedi meets Egyptian President El-Sisi in Cairo. And South Africa to ban the breeding of lions in captivity for hunting.
Africa is a continent of diversity, with varied climates and enchanting geography, and a people so distinct, but with a shared enduring spirit. We are at the heart of the continent to bring you the untold stories.
Let's have a look.
We celebrate Africa as it shapes its own destiny.
I've been sure she's tuning in Cairo,
Syria,
Juba,
Ethiopia,
Tanzania.
Africa Live. Find your voice.
President of the Democratic Republic of Congo and the current head of the African Union, Felix Tshisekedi, has concluded his visit to Sudan and is now in Egypt to hold talks with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah El-Sisi. His visit comes amid international and regional efforts to relaunch negotiations over Ethiopia's disputed dam on the Nile River. The African Union brokered negotiations in Kinshasa in April but failed to make progress on the issue. The Nile Dam dispute now centers on how quickly Ethiopia should fill and replenish the reservoir, as well as how much water it should release downstream in case of a multi-year drought.
We are very thankful for the efforts exerted by Your Excellency in order to find a solution for the issue of the Ethiopian dam, and let me assure you that we in Egypt are eager to support all efforts in order to reach a legal agreement on the issue.
Uganda's parliament is seeking to penalize homosexuality for the second time in 7 years under a new sexual offences bill. Even before the bill gets the president's assent to become law, it's already causing an uproar from activists. Isabel Nakiria reports.
Lawmakers in Uganda were involved in a heated debate before the sexual offences bill was eventually passed. The bill reintroduces homosexuality as an offense, saying it protects the African culture. Offenders face 10 years imprisonment and will have their records entered into a register. Activists argue it promotes hate against the gay community.
It's going to promote a lot of homophobia towards these people, and we know how far homophobia can go in affecting the lives of LGBTI people, in even accessing critical services like health services.
This is the second time Uganda is criminalizing same-sex relationships. Court later threw it out, saying there was no quorum when it was passed. Legislators also struck off a proposal to withdraw consent during a sexual act. The mover of the bill says consent is very critical and removing it will only promote indecency and rape culture.
The law should allow or should guide and say even where consent has been granted, a partner should be at liberty to withdraw it at any stage. Why? Because there may be circumstances that warrant somebody to say, I want to discontinue this act.
Lawmakers also added men as offenders in prostitution, which was previously missing in the old Penal Code Act. People caught exchanging indecent pictures online face up to 7 years in jail. But campaigners want this clause reviewed.
The non-consensual sharing of, you know, maybe intimate pictures of especially women, because we've only seen women getting prosecuted under this act already, under the this clause under the Pornography Act. So seeing it still come up in the sexual offences bill, where we had hope that some of these things will be removed and then would use this as a benchmark to go and say we need to review the Anti-Pornography Act, then also derails a lot of work that's been put into protecting women against these kinds of sexual abusers.
Other offences in the bill include sexual harassment, defilement and indecent assaults. The enacted bill comes a few weeks after the police report of 2020 showed a rise in sexual offences. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Kampala, Uganda.
South Africa has revealed plans to end the practice of breeding lions in captivity for trophy hunting. This move follows the release of a long-awaited high-level panel report on this controversial practice. The report found that captive lion breeding does not contribute to conservation and continues to damage South Africa's reputation abroad. CGTN's Elisa Njamela has more.
Over the years, thousands of tourists have descended to South Africa from around the world for an opportunity to shoot lions for trophies. Walking with young lions and or petting them is also one of the very popular tourist activities. It's practices that have always drawn outrage from animal welfare activists. The activists have always complained, saying hunting lions in enclosures is cruel. The report by the high-level panel agrees.
The panel identified that the captive lion industry poses risks to the sustainability of wild lion conservation, resulting from the negative impact on ecotourism which funds lion conservation and conservation more broadly, the negative impact on the authentic wild hunting industry, and the risk the trade in lion parts poses to stimulating poaching and the illegal trade. The panel recommended that South Africa does not captive breed lions, keep lions in captivity, or use captive lions or their derivatives commercially.
The panel was made up of diverse experts. It was, amongst other things, tasked with studying the management and rules governing the hunting, trade, and keeping in captivity of lions, elephants, rhino, and leopards. Although yet to be formulated as policy, the panel recommendations have been approved for implementation by the department.
Implementation of the recommendations will transform the practices within the wildlife industry, enhance conservation of our environment and these species, invigorate rural economies, and empower traditional practices, leadership, and healers.
The decision is likely going to anger the multi-million dollar lion captive breeding industry.
Minister Chrissy, however, emphasized that the high-level panel is not meant to stifle the hunting industry.
Preventing the hunting of captive lions is in the interests of the authentic wild hunting industry and will boost the hunting economy and our international reputation and the jobs that this creates.
According to the Environmental Affairs Department, between 8 and 12,000 lions, along with thousands of tigers, cheetahs, and other big cats are spread across more than an estimated 350 facilities here in South Africa. Eunice Njovela for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Meanwhile, in Uganda, bird watchers are promoting the conservation of birds during this time of migration. Uganda is a flypath for migratory birds, and bird watchers are concerned about their safety as they fly back to Europe to nest. CGTN's Hilary Ayesiga reports.
Gloria Tim is a bird watcher. She's out in the wild to spot unique bird species.
Today I've been able to see some few rare birds. With the African fish eagle on the top of my list, and then the black crake. And I've also been able to register the black African jacana and a few weavers, and I can still hear the weavers calling, and then the pied kingfishers.
This year's theme is sing, fly, soar like a bird. And because of COVID-19 pandemic, each bird is encouraged to go out alone. But as a team moves deeper into the bird's habitats, she's concerned about their safety.
We see people cutting down trees every day, which you can look around, which has really, really hindered the habitats of the birds. This place used to be a party for birds. Birds would come and at any time of the day you would find very many birds, but right now you just pick out a few species up and down, and then that's the threat that we're having with the human activities.
Some of the most endangered species include the fox's weaver and the shoebill. Uganda has only around 150 shoebills remaining in the wild. Uganda is home to 10% of the birds in the world, and some of these are endangered species. Conservationists are now urging law enforcement agencies to protect their habitats. Conservationists have now embarked on a tree planting campaign to restore the habitats for these birds.
In terms of conservation, I urge Uganda, especially the government, to implement the laws on conservation, especially providing alternative livelihood to the communities around protected areas in order to protect these habitats.
The birds are not only important for tourism, but also agriculture, and protecting them and their habitats is now a priority for bird watchers like our team. Hilary Isga, CGTN, Kampala, Uganda.
You're watching Africa Live. It's still ahead on the program. South Africa's GDP is set to expand by 3-4% this year after 2020 contraction. And Zimbabweans yet to feel the benefits of an expanding economy.
This has taken me completely out of my depth, but at the same time it's exciting. It's new, it's different, it's a challenge.
It's really exciting.
Zimbabwe now, where the government recently revised the country's GDP upwards to $24 billion, attributing it to sound financial policies. However, citizens are yet to feel the benefits of an expanding economy, and analysts say the government must commit to implementing its own policies. CGTN's Farai Mwakutuya reports.
A bumper harvest, increased industrial capacity utilization owing to stronger demand for local products under COVID-19 restrictions, falling inflation and a stable currency have been the bedfellows of Zimbabwe's recent economic resurgence.
If you look at some of the crucial indicators in the economy, they seem to be coming right. These indicators have to be watched. There's no doubt about it that there is pressure in the economy, particularly from wage pressures coming through from the civil servants and from ordinary citizens.
Finance Minister Professor Mthuli Ncube says the country is now a $24 billion US dollar economy and expects 7.4% growth this year. The numbers, which make good reading on paper, may not translate to the lived reality.
The gap between the rich and poor is actually wider. A lot of people are earning below the poverty datum line, or they're earning amounts which are less, like possibly much less, 80% less than the USD comparatives when we did have the multi-currency. So if it's not flowing to the people, then it's just government that's playing up statistics at the moment.
Some observers say the full impact of the gains will be felt later.
To sustain the positive trajectory, authorities have been urged to expedite policies that will increase production in two key sectors of the economy. These are agriculture and mining.
One will substitute food imports and the other will generate foreign currency. Government also needs to maintain its fiscal discipline.
Government needs to not borrow, particularly from the unsupervised central bank overdraft. Government needs to also get its debts under control and make sure, to coin a well-used frame, live within its means.
The Southern African nation is anticipating a rebound from the COVID-19 crisis as it rolls out an accelerated mass vaccination program. Farai Mwakutuya, CGTN, Harare, Zimbabwe.
South Africa's economy is set to recover by between 3 and 4% this year. This is after the COVID-induced contraction in 2020. The country's vaccine rollout has, however, been marred by setbacks threatening the progress to kickstart the economy after last year's slump. News of the resumption of the COVID-19 vaccination program has also helped. CGTN's Angelo Coppola has more.
The country's main stock market, the JSE, has been resilient throughout the pandemic lockdowns, but it's not a proxy for the country's economy.
The JSE, we're now in May, it's just come off of 6 months of gains. So each month preceding, it's been green. April was only up 0.7%. So you can see the momentum we had last year is slowing down now. But that, as you say, it's not a proxy for South Africa. Mining shares, agricultural shares, more international focused companies have been doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
But some local sectors are getting organized. The South African tourism sector, one of the key job creators and contributors to the country's economy, has developed a sector recovery plan.
Well, I think this is a good start. The fact that we have a plan that's approved by cabinet, it shows that, you know, there is intent, you know, from government side, you know, to do more than what has been done in the past. So this is a good spot. And I must say that, you know, we participated in the formulation of this plan. And I do think that, you know, the fact that it's approved, it means that the resources can now be directed into the recovery of the sector.
However, listed hospitality and tourism companies are still languishing.
First one that comes to mind is something like Bidcorp. They're a food company. They supply a lot of the restaurants, hotels. They've been very, very range-bound. They actually had to write down hundreds of millions of rands worth of stock when lockdown happened because food doesn't last forever. So that's still been fairly range-bound, but you would expect it as tourism picks up, their numbers will pick up, restaurants will pick up, and their share price should pick up.
International tourism remains almost non-existent. The United States has effectively banned its nationals from visiting South Africa, but the tourism sector believes it can entice visitors to the country because its frontline workers are about to be vaccinated.
Now, the most important thing is that we want the touch points of tourism to be vaccinated so that we can then open up to the world. Those countries like the USA and many other UK that are saying that people should not come to South Africa, we can then say to them, our touch points are vaccinated. In fact, even now as I speak, our numbers are so low that, you know, I don't even understand why there's a restriction on people traveling to South Africa.
While tourism is important to South Africa, the economy is made up of several sectors that contribute to the country's GDP.
And our banks have found a lot lower write-downs than they were expecting, so there is, what they call it, green shoots. There is a silver lining to all of this.
While the Johannesburg Stock Exchange isn't a proxy for what happens in the South African economy, it's a good sign that there's some confidence returning. I'm Angelo Coppola for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Ghana's tech space is set to see a boost as Twitter moves to set up its first Africa office in the country. The social media company joins Facebook and other tech companies that have already set up shop in Africa. Technology enthusiasts say the move could help Ghana establish a hub for tech startups. CGTN's Nabil Ahmed Rufai reports from Accra.
Kwabena Nkrumah has been connecting with people, especially technology savvies, on the social media app Twitter for more than a decade. He is among several Ghanaians excited about the company's decision to set up its first Africa office in Ghana. He believes it will drive a change in the technology space in the country.
Our skills are intangible, so it's very difficult for a business to say, hey, a developer deserves this amount of credit or this amount of remuneration because clearly they don't know how much it's worth. So for a company like this to come, it's going to raise the value of our developers, of our techies, and then thereby causing a shift.
Twitter says it settled on Ghana because of its support for free speech and democracy. It plans to employ 11 Ghanaians for positions including engineering, marketing, and communications specialists.
But the choice of Ghana as Twitter's Africa headquarters hasn't been without controversy. Twitter fans in Nigeria see it as a snub to the continent's largest economy, which is also experiencing growth in its tech space since Facebook set up its first community hub in Africa in Nigeria in 2018. They wondered why their country was not selected because it has more than 36 million Twitter subscribers, which exceeds the entire population of Ghana.
Analysts say Ghana had the upper hand because it's easier to do business in the country than Nigeria. In 2019, Ghana surpassed Nigeria in the World Bank's Ease of Doing Business Index, ranking 13 places higher. Nkrumah says the presence of Twitter in Ghana could unearth many brilliant minds in the technology space.
It may draw the attention to some local developers' products. That is good, but nobody is seeing. Maybe someone has created something that Twitter could put into Twitter and it could be very, very famous, but nobody's seen. But Twitter being here, that person could be seen, you know, and then that person's product grows, that person starts to make millions, that person creates the next big company, starts recruiting people, and then growing the Silicon Valley of Ghana, which we've been praying for years and years and years.
Twitter says it will be working remotely as it works towards opening a physical office in the country. In the meantime, Kwabena Nkrumah hopes this opportunity will help to transfer skills to many developers in Ghana and the entire African continent. Nabil Ahmed Rufai, CGTN, Accra, Ghana.
Egypt's economy lost $23.6 billion in 2020 due to the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. Authorities say the most affected sectors include civil aviation, tourism and construction. From Cairo, here's Yasser Hakim examining the measures the government has taken to handle the economic shocks from the pandemic fallout.
Like in most countries around the world, the COVID-19 outbreak has taken its toll on Egypt's state budget. The government in the North African state had to roll out over $8 billion in emergency funds, as well as develop the healthcare services to deal with the high number of coronavirus cases throughout 2020. While expenditure mushroomed, foreign direct investments dropped significantly, as well as other sources of hard currency, which also plummeted.
The tourism, aviation and construction sectors were negatively affected by the pandemic. The government provided support to these sectors. A $6.5 billion stimulus package was pumped into the economy. One-fifth of it was allocated to the tourism and aviation industry, and another portion to the health sector. The transportation sector also received a considerable amount to upgrade services and infrastructure. These initiatives have helped, but there were still huge losses, and it's obvious it forced the state budget review.
A strong IMF-backed economic reform program that started in 2016 had softened the effects of the $24 billion budget loss. It has helped Egypt to be one of a few countries to post positive growth rates amidst the pandemic. According to Egyptian Minister of Finance Mohamed Maid, the government is eyeing an ambitious 5-6% growth rate in the next couple of years, up from the current 2.8%.
Supporting the IT and telecom sector financially has helped it flourish and become an important element in the targeted economic growth rate. The resumption of construction of national mega projects by the state after the lockdown are keeping the economy operating and growth levels up. Another important element is the support to the construction industry because the state interference has avoided a bubble burst in the market as real estate developers and the system were chaotic. We'll also see growing foreign direct investments in energy. Latest discoveries in natural gas is enabling it to attract the most investments.
The government also hopes the crucial but hard-hit tourism industry can recover by the second half of the year, as it would be a major boost to the targeted growth rates and foreign reserves. Yas Hakim for CGTN, Cairo.
And we still have more news for you here on the program. Here's what's ahead. We look at how one Nigerian woman recycles a trash into fashionable items.
The greatest journeys. The greatest sights. The greatest adventures.
Here in Tanater, this weir allows the locals to walk on water.
We're far more than just TV news. We're your passport to the wonders of Africa.
To bring you stories of struggle, survival and hope.
So let's explore. CGTN. See the difference.
Authorities in many Nigerian cities still face a major challenge in the handling and disposal of solid waste. The country, which has a population of over 200 million people, generates an average of 42 million tons of waste annually, which poses environmental and health hazards. But one woman is fighting to reduce waste production by converting trash into treasure. CGTN's Kelechi Emekalam tells us how.
28-year-old Rita Idehai inspecting beautifully woven bags at her recycling hub in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Passionate about environmental care, the geoscientist turned social entrepreneur established her recycling hub called EcoBarter in 2018. She collects mainly non-biodegradable materials such as plastics and paper and creates fashion pieces from that waste.
And the work we do has now moved from just recycling collection, collecting from households, to more of a lifestyle thing. And so right now, before you even generate waste, we have a platform where you can shop eco-friendly products. When you eventually generate waste, we make fabric from them using, you know, local techniques.
Not only is Rita helping stop environmental degradation by doing this, she's also empowering vulnerable women in the process. She has trained and employed women from camps for the internally displaced. From a life where they depended on aid for survival, these workers now earn as much as $50 in 3 days.
I've been benefiting from the work because I now have money to cater for my needs.
I'm here to train. I was once a student. I'm really happy and I really thank God that the first 20 women I trained, they are really doing well. Since last year, I've not been buying school bags. I weave the school bag myself and I sew it. And even the children know how to do it. Children in my area too, I weave the bag and give those that cannot even afford school bags.
The ResearchGate report on waste generation shows that Nigeria generates more than 42 million tons of solid waste annually. This is more than half of the 62 million tons of waste that's generated in sub-Saharan Africa. Only 20% of that is easily recyclable. Environmentalists say waste collection and recycling is a promising revenue generation option that Nigeria can explore. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Let's now take a look at your sports news. Here's what's coming up. Nigerian football fans divided over FIFA's plans to start elite African Super League.
How would you create your legend? On the field. On the tracks. In the arenas of Africa. Were you born to be a player? Could this moment be yours? Sports Scene. Find your game.
Welcome back. And that was CGTN Africa Live for May 9th, 2021, and you're listening to the Pan-African Journal, the worldwide radio broadcast, a special edition of our program for May 9th, 2021. We're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. We'll take a musical interlude. We'll be back with our concluding segment for this week's edition of the Pan-African Journal.
don't tell the truth. Smiling faces, tell lies, and I got proof.
Thank you. touch of a smile is amazing. Think about it. Did you hear it?
Welcome back, and that was Detroit's own Motown sound of the Temptations. And that was a tune entitled Smiling Faces, their cover of that song, which was also done by the Undisputed Truth and became a major hit. And right now we want to pay tribute to Robert Nestor Marley, better known as Bob Marley. We're approaching the 40th anniversary of his transition in May of 1981. And let's listen to Bob Marley.
Generation
Welcome back. And right now we want to move into an interview with the man himself, Bob Marley. This interview was conducted in New York City with Gil Nobles for his program Like It Is. This is from 1980. Let's listen in.
Pleased to have you as a guest on Like It Is.
Thank you.
How did it all start? Had music always been a part of your life from when you were a little boy?
Yeah, you know, growing up musical family, grandfather, mother, uncle, sister, Pete, and everything.
What part of Jamaica?
St. Anne's, you know.
Yeah?
It's in the country.
What town?
A town called Rodnall. It's not well known, you know. It's a little place up in the hills, you know.
Yeah. How big is your family?
Well, my family is really a big family, you know. Malcolm, their family name is Malcolm. It's a plenty.
That's a good name.
Yeah.
When did you begin to get involved in music, really?
About 1958.
Doing what?
Well, I was interested in music, but that time I was learning trade, you know, and meet up some guys who can sing. One named Desmond Decker. And so we started out from kind of rehearse together and thing, you know. And then one day we went away, did some recording. Then I fell after.
Mm-hmm. You weren't doing the same kind of things then that you're doing now. What kind of music was it in the beginning?
That music was ska.
Ska?
Ska music, yeah.
Well, how does ska differ from reggae?
Yeah, it's different. Different in sound, different in style, different playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Ska is a more quicker music mm-hmm. than reggae.
No relation?
Yeah, it's almost the same music breakdown, but much slower, you know.
Uh-huh. Same root?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's almost the same music, ska. But only say now, if it was playing at 33, it started playing at 7.5, you know.
I hear
a bit more.
That's a good analogy. How does reggae and ska come out of calypso? Many people ask that.
Yeah, because the calypso was always there first.
Right.
You know? And then now, when the musicians in Jamaica started to play, although them can play calypso too, because they play a lot of calypso, but because the American influence music come past through down there, you know? Them start to kind of get more to them time used to have Fats Domino.
Yeah.
And plenty of them type of people. So after a while now, the music start drift from the reggae. See, it used to be a music almost like a half blues. And used to play before the ska start, you know. Even people like Joe Higgs. You know that music?
Right.
Used to play that plenty.
Uh-huh.
So from there now it developed to people start ching, 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 ching for ska, you know.
Right.
And then for rocksteady like ching, ching, ching. For reggae now it's check, 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 you know. So you have three different feels. But the three of them can put together again and make one thing still.
Now, calypso music, most of it, dealt with family and folk stories and love and beautiful island in the sun, things
yeah.
like that. How did it move into what we're getting in the music now where we have message?
Because during that time of this calypso and thing. People never wasn't so conscious about Africa and where them roots come from.
Mm.
Since reggae come now, people get, not from a point of music, because music is always conscious, but since the reggae come now, the reggae start talk about Africa, blackness, you know, in a militant way. So that is how it kind of, that is how the lyrics differ from the whole island in the sun.
Well, who are some of your influences?
Well, I think my biggest influence is Marcus Garvey Selassie.
Yeah.
Sure.
from what you heard coming up as a boy about Garvey, or what you've learned now that you're grown, or what?
What to hear, what to read, you know, and what to know and know about him.
Did you learn much about Garvey in school?
No. Yes, them don't teach. It's the education that we don't get in school, you know. We don't get that type of education that when we grow up we can know who we is.
Mm-hmm.
We get a more education that we might know who Christopher Columbus is, how Marco Polo is, you know. But we never really know who Marcus Garvey is, who Haile Selassie is, or who any black man is.
Were you born as a Rasta? How did that evolve?
Well, I figure now I was born, you know, and then born and growing. There was a certain amount of consciousness in myself that, you know, it was always a lonely world, not finding people who might think like me, you know.
Yeah.
Not to say that I think so different, but because this consciousness about God and the people I come from is more Christian, you know. We always try to do, like, try to stand up not the right. But what we used to find out now, that one church quarreling against the next church, and I figure I never want any of that, you know. I never want really enter anything where this one will fight against that one and everybody talking about God still. So after going on and coming up, you know, the thing that was there get more stronger, come to Kingston, meet some more people, them people is Rasta. You talk to them, find out, it's the same thing I have inside. It's the same thing.
How old were you when this started to happen?
This is about 17, 18, you know.
Uh-huh.
I find out that the same thing where I deal with, the same thing where the Rasta man talk about. So that is how I could identify myself as a Rasta. By not changing, you know.
Now, what happened when you went back home and told your family what you had found?
Oh, I never have a home to go back to.
No?
No. Where we from, everybody gone, you know.
Uh-huh.
Everybody gone. Everybody living in America, some living in Kingston, everybody gone. So, never really have a home, not that much, although we used to have a home before grandfather died, you know. But after grandfather died, everything gets crashed. So
you came to Kingston, and that's where it began to happen.
Yeah.
Where did you live in Kingston? What part?
East. I call it East Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
Out near the east.
Yeah.
And then we go up a place named Oxford Street, you know, down to Spanish Town Road, down to then up to Trenchtown.
Yes. So, for a long time, things were kind of lean.
Well, yes, things was kind of lean as can. It leads to what is your expectation in your do, you know? To me, it was lean, but I could understand it, because coming from a country where you learn to do things like, you don't learn to depend on family and all of that, you know? You go out and you plant your own corn, and you watch the corn grow. When corn grow, you pick your own corn, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All of them fruits on them tree, you can get them, you know? So.
It's a little different, though, in town.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do different things to eat, eh?
Well, when you're in the city, that whole different ball game, you know?
Right.
People have to go to work, catch the bus. You know, the country, all the day, you go for the donkey, and you ride the donkey to the farm, and you're cool, you know?
Right.
You know, the city, people also catch the bus, go to work, get off of work, come back home, you know? So it was a different thing up there.
I know a little bit about Jamaica, and I understand in Kingston, Trenchtown is a rough part of town. How did you survive?
Well, while living in Trenchtown, you know, as a young man, surviving was easy. The only thing you have to really look out for was the police, you know. Because the police could have just get you, frame you. You go to prison, and because you come from Trenchtown, you know, Trenchtown's from them say, where you from? It's a Trenchtown. You're gone. You know? You get shipped out.
You know, a lot of people are confused about what a Rasta really is and have a very negative image of the Rasta. T- Tell us what a Rasta is.
See, Christ promised that him will return within 2,000 years, you know, and him said when him come, him will be the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the conquering Lion of Judah, through the lineage of King Solomon and King David. Now, my life have great meaning to me, so I really search to find out if God is here. When I search, I look in Ethiopia, I look all about, looking at Germany, you know, because men of prejudice. Me look for God. Me looking at Ethiopia, I say, one man stand up with these names, Emperor Elias last day, name King of Kings, Lord of Lords, conquering land of Judah, through the lineage of King Solomon and King David, written in the Bible. Now, one of my thing is that the Bible, them say that King James edit the Bible. Now, my understanding is that King James edited the Bible, I don't think he was edited for the benefit of black people. So when the revelation turned out that Haile Selassie is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, coming straight through the lineage of King Solomon and King David, then, you know, we really know that this is the Christ return, because we know in this world, yeah, when the white man, edited, he wouldn't edit it in our behalf. You know, England more edited to make it look like England going to be the big, big thing. But in the last days, they'll prove out that is Ethiopia, Haile Selassie, you know. And Haile Selassie's name is Rasta. So we are called Rasta, you know, called by his name.
Uh-huh.
And then, it's a lot of things. We go as far as saying, him say, when him return and you call upon him, now this is God. Him say, when him return and you call upon him, your mother and your father will forsake you. Now, we know that if you call upon the Catholics, them embrace you. You call upon the Church of God, them embrace you. Any religion you call upon, you might get embraced. The only religion them push you off from is Rasta. But that just makes the truth more real, because them say, when you call upon my name, your mother and your father will forsake you. And that is why today here Rasta gets so much bad name. It's not because Rasta did anything bad, but it's because all the prophecy go with it. If your mother and your father will forsake you, just imagine people who don't even know you. You know what I mean?
Well, in most religions, you go to church on Sunday, and you may go to a Bible class once or twice during the week,
true.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Is it pretty much basically the same in Rasta, or is it more involved?
No, what we say no. We say that the man is a church. The Bible is there. But what we find out now is that a lot of people read the Bible, but they don't understand the Bible, because the approach to the Bible is wrong. I mean, there's no way you can read a book. You just take up a book and just read it in the middle and figure you can find out what was happening from the beginning to the middle. The Bible is a whole book with a whole tradition in it. And from them read to Genesis to Revelation, the whole truth of the whole straight road with the overstanding is there. You know? So it's not a several then we just go go to church and do like the other Christian. We know that the man is a church. You know? Because see, you just can't overthrow the truth. You know? We, our people, our roots, when we search for it, we find it in a Rasta. Because we don't see, there's no other way. We don't see no other way. Is Rasta or find the roots, you know,
How do you handle fame?
I handle fame by not being famous.
Come on, you know you're a famous man.
No, I mean, you know, not to me.
No?
Not famous to me.
Some people get drunk off of fame.
See, I learned from he was coming in, from I just started music. You know, the people them want me. Them show me say, hey, this game is a game where if you don't mind sharp, you lose your consciousness. So the only way you can lose your consciousness is because if you figure say you're getting, some people say rare, your head might get swell.
Right.
And if your head swell, that's it. So you know, we really don't keep my head in a bandage that it can't swell.
How do you handle the women that come at you in droves? People have visions of women beating down the door to get at Bob Marley and grabbing clothes. Is it like that?
No.
No?
No. I'm uneasy, you know.
Is it difficult, though, to keep your balance and not, you know, get to feeling that you're more important than you really are when so many people are after you all the time for different things?
No, you see, I don't think, I never really check myself, you know, I know I am benefit to the people, you know, that's the only consciousness I have of myself, that I can be beneficial to a people, you know, and I don't know anything else, I don't know that.
What do you think it is that has made Bob Marley such a big name?
I think, you know, maybe it's just what Bob Marley stands for.
What is that?
The truth. And the determination to stay alive and survive. You know?
You have a record out called Survival.
Yeah. That was last year.
Yeah. Did anything happen to you that caused you to write that?
Well, 1976, I'm shoot off from the right.
Yes.
And I figured that was survival, you know.
Yeah. What happened when you were shot? You were in your home.
Yeah.
Was it in the morning or at night or what happened?
Well, it was about, that's about 9 o'clock in the night.
Yeah.
What happened is that the night before, about 3 nights before that, I was living at a place called Bulby, you know.
Mm.
And I went to about 3 o'clock in the morning. And get some sleep. And then I vision I was in a lot of gunshots. You know? That was a dream. I was in a barrage, a gunshot. But when it's all over, you know, it's like I never really get no shot. But my mother get shot. You know, the vision show my mother get shot in her head. And what happened is that the vision said, don't run. You know, it's like, do you know that this gunshot is like something that the vision said, don't run, stand up. So when the gunshot started firing on Hope Road, the first thing come back to my mind was the vision. And all I could remember is that the vision said, don't run. And so me have to stand up, you know. And, you know, them fire until it was a tired fire, and then two is not really a lawful gun battle. Man starts running, it ease up, you know.
And where were you hit?
Eh?
Where were you hit?
Me? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Went right through? Or just skin?
No, them said lodge inside there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You never saw the gunman?
Well, at that time, no.
But you know who did it?
Yeah, I know him.
Were they caught?
No, by the court of police.
Mm.
It's just, you know, one thing.
You have a record company now.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, you know, a long time we always have a record company. What we have now is a recording studio. When we go into the studio to work, it was a lot of hassle. I mean, we're rasta, you know. Some people don't want to rust in them studio. No, if you stop all of this, you have to make one. Because, you know what I mean? A man might say, don't you say, I'll slash your God. Well, you know what I mean? Go and build your own studio. You know what I mean? So, all right, I'll slash his God, I'm going to go and build a studio, you know? So, you know what I mean? I just said, go. Is it them things that come through sabotage and through pressure? If everything was nice, maybe we wouldn't have to build a studio. But, you know, it's just a tricky place. It's not everyone really have that humanitarian feeling. Some people just are dealing with, them don't even know what I'm dealing with.
Mm. What's ahead for Bob Marley, do you know? Do you have an agenda or a master plan?
Well, I feel ahead for I and I is the unity of Africa. And then when the unity of Africa comes, then people will really understand, say, you know, there was something in this thing. There is something in it.
Do you think of yourself more as an African than a Jamaican?
Yeah, because one of the main things is that we're Rasta. From you accept Rasta, you become an Ethiopian, which is Africa. Next thing again, the history of Jamaica shows that the Arawak Indian was living there, and it belonged to the Arawak Indian. Now, our history shows that through slave business, black people come out of the Western thing, you know? So we still figure, say, Africa is a root, you know? And this is where we must return to.
What do you see as most of Africa's problems as far as uniting? I mean,
I see Africa problem is that outside people keep on fatiguing the people, you know, and make them can't really get them things together. You know, if it's not this superpower, it's that superpower. But Africa is only a place which part of the music exploit. You know, nobody know really. Africa so rich that it become a man just going to Africa, steal out where a man steal and carry back in a theme country. And Africa stayed alive. You know? But Africa ready.
Garvey used to say Africa for the Africans. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, Africa for Africans, a woman abroad, you know. True.
Will your home base, though, always be Jamaica? Or someday would you like to live in Africa?
No, someday I'm going to be in Africa.
Yeah.
Maybe we open a Jerusalem. You know what I mean? And then Bible land.
And what do you think lies ahead for Jamaica?
I think what lies ahead for Jamaica is that Jamaica is a beautiful island. The best thing Jamaica could have been. It's just like how Jamaica, like how England owned Jamaica. Jamaica must make some part of Africa own Jamaica. You know what I mean? And it work more nicer, I mean, you know. But if it's going to be a thing which part, we always going to have a war. Because, you know, the solution is either them get themselves with Nigeria or with someone, you know what I mean? But make Jamaica become some African, something to do with Africa, that Africa holding Jamaica, you know? But because of people and them whole ideology and philosophy where they want to come with, you know, some people want to be Marxist, some want to be this, some want to be that, and nobody don't, and plenty of people don't want to be with them is, and where them is African, and Africa have its own culture, and its own people, and you know, all it needs is people who keep it down for either die out of the earth or something.
What is your feeling about the condition of black people here in the United States?
I feel like black people should develop themselves, you know, not to settle down, just developing up yourself having a prejudice thing to it. It's just that we are people with our own history and culture. We can educate ourselves. I mean, we are the first creators. So we have to really, everything when you see on this earth here, the black man make it. And I'm saying that the white man don't make some, but all wisdom comes from the black man.
You know, a lot of young viewers look up to you and are going to want to hang on every word and every syllable. Do you have a message for young people?
Well, you know, the whole thing again is to really check out the truth of Rasta and don't make like fallyism. Don't make it check it out. And don't get too busy that you can't check out the truth. Because the truth is there. And Africa awaits its creators. And we know that the people in the West, headwise, them ready, you know. Them have to learn, come learn. What them learn in the West, them have to care to them to them people. Make it be a benefit to the people. Because I mean, how long must the black people suffer? And these are people, you know? And then we have our own culture. We have everything. We don't shatter anything. We have everything. Plus, we have a land that no one is living there. And we must go home to it. And when you go home, you can build all of these big buildings if you want. I mean, if you miss a city, build a city. You know what I mean? If you want a car, you can get a car. I mean, I don't see the big thing. One time America was, you know what I mean, maybe used to have lots of all what I call it, all sort of thing I walk through. Africa is a peaceful place. Then we want to fool black people, but it's a jungle and blah, blah, boom, boom.
Where have you been in Africa?
Welcome back, and that was an interview with Bob Marley in 1980. He made his transition the following year in May of 1981, and that's going to conclude our program for today. If you'd like to have access to this program, just go to the Pan-African Radio Network. That's at blogtalkradio.com/Pan-African Journal. If you'd like to read the Pan-African Newswire, just go to our website at panafricannews.blogspot.com. This is Abayomi Anzikiwe signing off, and have a beautiful week.
Look more, Jones. My eyes this morning. Yeah. Yeah.